It's time for our weekly catch-up with ACT Party Deputy Leader Brooke Van Velden.
Now it's time for our regular catch-up with one of our most important minor parties about the political hot potatoes of today and tomorrow. Today, Alex chatted with ACT's Brooke Van Velden about the government's new youth crime strategy and ACT's call for ankle bracelets on youth offenders, as well as a GST sharing members' bill to fund housing and infrastructure. Here's that chat now.
Well, I think what's happened this week is that the Labor Party has decided to take this youth crime epidemic seriously. You know, we have so many reports of ram raids and youth committing crimes and making people feel unsafe on their streets and in their communities, and especially for the business owners who are just trying to get by and recover from COVID, who are finding that people are breaking into their stores or ram raiding them with vehicles to try and break in, and it's not acceptable. So the government's announced an increase in their policies, which is all about wraparound support for younger people who are offending. But we have some real problems with this because it's just an extension of their existing policies. But what we believe is missing from all of this is that there's no consequences at any point for any of these actions. You know, younger people who are committing crime know that they can get away with it because there's no consequence for their actions. And so we are saying that we need to have more support for police, and we need to have more consequences in the form of ankle bracelets for young offenders. And so hear me out here. The police, over the last 2 years with COVID restrictions, have spent far more time dealing with COVID and being stationed outside MIQ hotels than they have been doing youth aid work. And that's really disappointing because there are thousands of unassigned youth aid cases where we know that police want to do that work, but they just haven't had the resources. So we say that we need to support our police getting back into youth aid work. But secondly, young people need to know that there is a consequence for their crime. And if they're caught doing ram raids, we say they should have an ankle bracelet placed on them so that they know that committing crime isn't glamorous. Their friends aren't going to want to hang out with them in the middle of the night when they've got a bracelet on them, letting police know if they're involved in a scene of a new crime. And they'll know that they have to have a curfew because we need to have police looking after these kids.
So there is quite a significant jump in logic there from police have been under-resourced and haven't been able to perform their usual support roles when it comes to youth crime to we should put children on home detention. Could you just explain that jump a little bit?
So there's two things here. So firstly, we need to allow more resources for police who have been diverted from youth aid work over the last 2 years back into youth aid work. You know, some police officers have said that they weren't assigned youth aid cases until March this year because they were stationed doing other work. So we've seen over the last 2 years young offenders have gotten away with crime because the police weren't there given the resources to actually work on these cases. So they've pretty much just got away with things. So we need to refocus more work into youth aid policing because we know that that actually does help to get wraparound support. So that's one issue. The second is, you know, when I talk to people, they say that there's not enough consequences for crime. And one of the biggest problems here is if you're a young offender and you're going through the justice system where people don't want to give you a criminal conviction, which is very justifiable because we want to try and help kids not get into a system of ending up in prison for the rest of their lives and coming in and out of criminal activity. But we don't see people taking the crime seriously. Sure, we need wraparound support to try and get them on the straight and narrow, but we also need to say to kids, if you do a crime, expect consequences for your actions. And if we have businesses who are being ram raided, and there are a lot of repeat offenders, we need to actually know that people are tracking these kids to say, yes, there has been a ram raid that has taken place. We also know it's connected to that kid who did one before because we've got the ankle bracelet data. I think that's really important. But it also sends a signal to these kids who are hanging out with other kids who might be committing crime. You know, it's not actually glamorous. If you do crime, you are going to look a bit silly. You are not going to be part of the group, and you can't hang out at midnight committing more crime because you will have an ankle bracelet on you, and people will be watching to see where you're going because these kids are just getting away with getting out of their house again and committing more crime.
I guess this does seem like a bit of a jump from, say, previous Act policies of allowing fines to be issued to, say, shoplifters, to putting ankle bracelets on children and giving them home detention. Where, you know, to me that seems closer to sending kids of that age to prison than it does previous Act policy. I'm just wondering what's the rationale behind this, and what do you say to those that would say that this criminalizes kids?
Well, it doesn't criminalize kids at all. But what it really does is it sends a message that if you do a crime, yes, we will help try and get you back into education. We will try and help give you the support that you might need from a community and from the police and other agencies to help you reset your life. But if you do a crime, there is a consequence for your action. What is missing at the moment is that kids who are committing crime are not seeing any penalties or punishment for their actions. And then at the time that they start becoming criminalized is when all of a sudden the state decides that they're now a fully fledged adult. And they go from no consequence at all to really serious consequence, which means that you can end up in prison. So there's no escalation at any point to say to kids, hey, if you keep going under this way, you will find that at some point you'll stop being a youth offender and you'll become an actual offender. And that sort of action will lead you to going straight to prison. So it's kind of like a little bit of a warning that these actions do actually end up with consequences.
Brooke and I then discussed ACT's proposed GST sharing measure with councils to combat growing infrastructure costs.
Well, we have a GST sharing scheme as a members' bill in the ballot in Parliament currently that should be up for debate in a matter of weeks. And what it's really identifying is that when councils and builders, architects, everybody involved in the building process says it's hard to get anything built in this country. It's identifying the problem behind the housing crisis as an infrastructure crisis. And that's the real reason when I talk to people who are actually involved in building, why it's so hard to get anything done. Now, councils know that every time something new is built in their city, it actually costs some money because it means more people coming into their city, more people are using their resources, and it means more cars on the streets, it means more people in public transport, it means more people using their libraries and so on, and it just can't keep up with the amount of resources that the councils have. So roadblocks are put in place to make it harder and harder and more consenting is needed to try and get anything done. So we say, actually, let's fix the real root of the problem, which is that every time a new house is built, it needs infrastructure to connect it to a community. So half of the GST from every house that's built, the ACT Party says, should go to the local council that issues the consent. And that would free up billions of dollars to help councils plan for new growth and new development. And what we've really seen is Labor and National over the last few years have got together and said that they know how to solve the crisis, and it's to allow 3 3-story homes on every section in any large town. Now, that is just causing mass confusion, and it will create chaos in the planning for infrastructure, and we say that we actually just need to be smarter about it. It wasn't a fault that there wasn't enough land for people to be able to build and develop on, because the Auckland Council had already created the Auckland Unitary Plan for this. It's the fact that the councils knew that they didn't have the infrastructure to meet that demand. So let's nip it in the bud and pay for the infrastructure.
And do you see this as complementing the existing policies like the medium density residential standards and the national policy statement in urban development, which, as you mentioned, have led to more housing being possible in terms of its zoning?
Well, what the ACT Party has said when these plans were put in place is that we wanted infrastructure provisions to be put on top of them. We said if Labor and National were going to go ahead with three-story homes and allow for mass intensification within the cities, we should at least also do infrastructure with it. They voted that down, which is really unfortunate because they haven't created anything else that will help infrastructure in the meantime. But we don't agree with the changes to the MDRS or to the NPSUD, all of these big acronyms, for the intensification and the three-story homes, because we do believe it doesn't really solve that problem. It's causing an unknown amount of angst because a lot of people in the community are only just finding out months after this law has been passed that it's even happened. And they'll be finding that things are going up next door that they weren't expecting, and also that the councils aren't happy about it at all. We actually think instead of three-story homes on every section, which will cause chaos, we should have just stuck with the Auckland Unitary Plan. But if we had to come to a compromise, we should allow for 3 two-story homes, which would be less confusing and divisive for community. And we should also allow for the government and the council to have intensification as a qualifying matter. So under the law for intensification, the government has gone on top of council and said, scrap all your rules. These are the rules that we want to apply. And it's intensification across the board in the cities. The councils have said, well, we can't really allow for that because we've got all of our other existing plans. And so they're trying to create carve-outs. We've said, what should be considered a qualifying matter or a carve-out for the plan is if the infrastructure around that area doesn't meet the standard or quality that's needed for intensification. Because otherwise you're going to end up with sewage in the street, and we're already seeing this in parts of Auckland.
And do you see the infrastructure bill that you're putting forward as having any caveats? For example, would you like it to see spending concentrated in, say, central areas of the city or the suburban areas? Could you speak a little on that?
Well, the bill doesn't go into detail on whereabouts in the city the money should be spent for intensification. The whole purpose behind it is to say to council, you are saying that it's hard to get things built because you don't have the infrastructure. We're saying that where you can plan for it and where you can plan for development, this money will go some way to help you with the infrastructure needs around that community where that new development will end up. But I think what is happening with the government going on top of councils and saying, scrap all of your rules, these are what you should do, and by the way, here's no money for infrastructure to help you with it, is causing a lot of division between council and government and between council and people who live in the cities. And it's all because the government, Labor and National, have misdiagnosed the problem, which is that infrastructure is holding our cities back, not the planning laws.
That was Alex speaking to Brooke Van Velden in his weekly chat with the ACT Party Deputy Leader.
That was Deputy Leader Brooke Van Velden from the ACT Party.